My name is Kerry Fitzgerald, although people know me as Kerry On, and I was born December 9th, 1949. And my parents were William Wallace Fitzgerald and Anita Cook Fitzgerald, both native Texans. I was born in Houston, Texas, and that's where I was born, yes. I don't remember, but I was. When I grew up, it's Houston. Well, all I knew was Houston when I was just born there, and I just lived there for my first 20 years. So that's kind of all I really knew. I lived in suburban Houston, a place called Oak Forest. Is when we first, my first 8 years were in Oak Forest, and which was kind of northwest Houston. And then when I was 8 years old, I moved out to Westbury, southwest Houston, which was a brand new subdivision. So there was no trees, there was nothing. It was just out there in a rice field. And so we kind of, we had to pretty much discover the land and do it all right there in Westbury, southwest Houston. That's when I spent most of my years, like I guess from when I was about 8 to about 20, I was stayed there in southwest Houston over there, Westbury. I remember coming here as a child. My parents would come here and visit the Capitol. In fact, my mother actually lived and went to the University of Texas. So she had would come back here, kind of a nostalgia thing, and bring the kids back and show us around. And I was like, God, Austin is really, I really liked Austin coming from Houston because there were trees and there was water and there were hills. So I was very excited about Austin, even when I was like, you know, 6 or 8 years old, I knew about Austin. I wanted to come to Austin my entire life. So I finally was able to come here when I was 20 years old, just because I finally had enough of Houston and using a good excuse to come here to go to University of Texas. My parents fell for that. So they said, oh yeah, we'll send you there to go to college. So I came here to go to college, although I kind of knew I was really just moving here. So I did kind of struggle with college for a couple of years at UT, and I did get some hours, but I really wasn't into it. How do you like music? Well, I always liked it. I was never really proficient or good at it, playing it, but it was something that was always around, and I can remember just growing up being influenced by, you know, just hearing it on the radio. All we had was AM radio back when I was a kid, but, you know, it was just there in the background. My brother was 5 years older, and he was a big Elvis Presley fan, so he kind of got me into Elvis a little bit early there, and, you know, the good Elvis before he went in the Army. I had no real formal training to be a singer. In fact, I was discouraged by... when I was in seventh grade, back in the day, what you took in Houston, you'd have one semester, which was half of a year of art, and one semester of music. And when you go to seventh grade, they put you in either art or music. And luckily, I went into art my very first year, half a year. So I did 6 months of art, and then they switch you over to music. So when I went to the music class, which was in seventh grade, which was called high seventh then. I don't have it anymore, but it was like the second semester of seventh grade. A teacher put me in a big room with all the other students, you know, 30 or 40 students, and had us sing in a little chorus deal. Well, you might have seen this episode on Andy Griffith, Barney Fife, when they were singing him in the chorus. They kept you know, asking me, okay, what's that? Who's singing out of tune? Who's singing out of key? They kept going, and finally it was narrowed down to 40 students. It was, the teacher looked right at me and goes, you can't sing. And I said, well, okay, I know that. She goes, go back to the art. So I went back to the art department. You know, I didn't have to take music. I was kicked out of the music class and went back to art. And I was so very happy to be able to go back to art. And I took art the next 6 years in school, all the way through junior high and high school, middle school and high school. I took art. I was never musically trained. In fact, I tried to learn to play guitar at one time, and I was terrible, and everyone just said, no, go away. Go back to art. Your music part, it's not happening with you. So I was told very early that I had no future in music. And it kind of hurts to this very day to be picked out like that by the music teacher and said, go away, go back to art. But although I was very happy about it then. The Uranium Savages, which is the only band I've ever been in, and probably the only band I ever will be in, because I really don't fit in any other band. We basically were started out as kind of a comedy thing, you know. It was as much music as it was comedy, and which was my background, really, in theater. I had a theater background and a little bit of a comedy background, believe it or not, even though it was totally different back then in 1974. But our type of music was more of a theatrical. We were coming from the theater point of view. The musicians, we did have some musicians that started out from day one that were actually could play, but the majority of the members of the band were more into theater or just, you know, outrageous stuff, you know, artistic kind of things. So it was kind of half musicians and half art. And I was kind of the art side always, the artist side, you know, dress up in funny costumes and give a little show instead of just going out there and playing music. It was more like a little show kind of a deal, which was really something I knew how to do, because as a kid in our neighborhoods when I was growing up, we always gave little shows in the neighborhood. We'd get the kids together and we'd make a little, in somebody's garage, we'd make a little theater and we'd give shows. And it was just something we just did every year. And so it was kind of a thing I always did. And not that I was that great at it, it was just fun for us to do. I would judge excellence in music basically as something that I could probably pick up and listen that I would still like today that I liked 50 years ago. You know, it's something that you can always just listen to. Even if you're really listening, not listening that hard, it's just in the background or it's just somehow. Excellence in music is just, to me, it's almost like another whole world that I don't even understand, even though I'm kind of in it. It always amazes me when people can play music and do music. It's almost like they're aliens, or who are these people? How can they do that? And I think it's just because, when I know it's because, they sat down and taught themselves and they had the patience to do it. And I guess I never had that patience. But excellence in music is just something that I can, that's really a hard question. I don't know. I don't even know what excellence in life is. You know, how can I say what's excellent in music? It's always learning. It's just a learning process every single day. But I guess the bottom line is, if I can listen to something over and over and not get sick of it or not get tired of it, but still enjoy it, then that's excellence to me. Some songs I can't even listen all the way through one time. And some songs I can just play over and over every single day. So, to me, it's just kind of a personal deal, I guess. Everyone's different, and I have my taste in music, and I'm sure everyone else does. What I have learned from being in a band for almost 45 years, I mean, that's longer than I've ever been in a relationship. That's longer than I've ever been lived in a house or lived in with my parents. You know, it's like that's something that's kind of constant with me. And that maybe that's really the best thing. It's something that is constant. And I still get along with the guys that are in the band. I mean, we don't hang out together, you know, when we're not playing. But when we get together and rehearse and we play, we like each other, okay? And we make each other laugh. So that's kind of really the most important thing, it seems like to me, is even in life, it seems like whoever you kind of like hanging out with, it will make you laugh or will, you know, entertain you a little bit or just actually just be a happy, good person. So basically being in a band to me is like fun, fun, fun. You know, I'm more of the fun end than the musical, or let's just get this correct. Let's just get this right. Let's just rehearse the same song 5,000 times till we're sick of it. We're kind of like every time we play, we don't know what's going to happen. We kind of know what songs we're going to do, but we don't exactly know what's going to happen. And that's the kind of what I like about the whole thing is, okay, let's get together and put a little show on. And if you want to show up and watch it and be part of it, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine too, because we're kind of doing this for ourselves, to tell you the truth. So if you want to join us, come on. There's room for everybody. I like my band, and I like how they play, and I like how they sound, and I like the people. And that's just really it. It just makes it, it's just easy to me to be with them. Now, if I had to go to another band, like just say Extreme Heat, said, hey, we come be our singer, it'd be like, no way could I ever do that. I can do my own songs because I wrote these songs and I can sing them however I sing them. It's more talking, really, but that's why I like writing music, writing songs, because, hey, how can you mess them up if it's your own song? I created this. I did this. This is how it sounds this time, okay? This is how we're doing it. So this is the correct way. Now, if I was in a cover band, I had to actually sound like some other band and sing like somebody else. I couldn't do that. I wouldn't want to do that. It would be just like, oh, so boring. But to make up your own little songs and make up your own stuff and just to do it, that is it. I mean, that's it. That's all there is to it. I do know this, playing live music is a little bit different today than it was in 1975. I understand that it's a lot different, and the challenges of music is different, and I understand that everything is different. Everything is different except the joy you get from actually doing it and the joy you get from hearing it. Now, music is just different these days. There's so many different kinds. Back when I was growing up, it seemed like all the different styles of music were acceptable. You hear a country song, you hear a blues song, you hear a rock and roll song. You know, it'd be all different. You'd hear different kinds of forms of music. And then it just kind of got where it was more and more different styles, different kinds of world music. You know, all these different forms of music started happening. And there were little cliques for each form of music. Like, oh, I only like reggae music. I only like blues. Well, I've always been like, I don't really care what, if it's blues. I don't know the difference today. The truth. If I like a song, I like it. I don't care if it's reggae music, if it's blues, if it's gospel. I don't know. I don't know the difference. So to me, people need to actually play musical instruments. This seems kind of important to me. I don't know if I necessarily like all this DJ kind of stuff where people just play records and, I don't know if that's really I'm sure it is a talent. It takes a special person to be able to do that. But I really admire people that can actually sit down and play guitar or sing a song. I mean, gee, how do they do that? I don't know, but I like it. So I think people need to play instruments, musical instruments, if they're going to be doing music. But that's just me thinking that. I chose to come to Austin because I really liked what was going on in Austin, and I liked the people, the whole vibe. I didn't necessarily come to Austin for the music. That was just already here. That was just part of it. I came to Austin for the natural beauty of just looking around and, you know, seeing it. And I came here because it was pretty much a liberal, it's always been a liberal town. I mean, that's from day one. Austin has been more of a liberal type town in Texas. Like, that was a town that all the artists and all the musicians would go to. Because, you know, if you lived in Houston, you're going to work at an oil field or refinery, or you're going to be a lawyer or work at a department store. If you come to Austin, well, you have an excuse to be an artist. I mean, it's just like, okay, we'll put all the artists in this one little town. So I came here primarily for the beauty of the whole thing, to get out of Houston. I knew I wanted to come to Austin, and it was almost like I was destined to be here. And the art, I really liked the art. I liked. I saw Jim Franklin's Armadillo posters and that stuff in Houston, and I saw that stuff happening in Houston, and I said, those people up there in Austin, they kind of get it a little bit more. They're doing posters that are just really artworks instead of just an advertising. I'm going to go up there and check all that out. So I came up here, and I fell immediately into, like, with the Vulcan Gas Company was still going on, and I met Jim Franklin like the first week I was in town, and, you know, he kind of just, you know, was nice to me and said, oh yeah, you do art. You want to do a poster? So he let me do Armadillo opened up after I lived here 6 months. It opened up in June of 1970 and I moved here in January 1970. So it was kind of like I was there at the very beginning of the Armadillo. And Franklin asked me to do a poster And I was, oh, I felt very honored. You know what? It was like, oh, this is like, okay, I've arrived. Jim Franklin asked me to do a poster. So I was in on the art end before the music end. Well, because I was in on the art end, I was able to get in on the music end because I was able to hang around musicians or do posters for them or do posters for the Armadillo, or do soap posters for Soap Creek. Suddenly I had a kind of an in with the music people, and I got to meet them, and I was like very fascinated by these people. And that's how art has always got me in the back door into different places. I've realized that, you know. And so that was how I got into the music. I was in the art end of it. And so I had to somehow, if I had a band, I need to do something besides draw the posters. So I had to come up with some songs, you know. And luckily, I was able to write. I was always interested in writing. You know, my background, my parents, my brother were writers. They wrote. So I understood that. I could write stuff. And so that's what I would do. Now, I'm not saying it was that great or it was wonderful, but it was something that you had to do. It was like, okay, I'm going to write these words. Let's make up a music. Let's make up some, you know, tune to it. And then suddenly you have a song that was suddenly something you wrote. It's like, wow, how did that happen? How did that really happen? So I came through music, through art. And that's really how I lead my whole life. The art takes me everywhere I want to go. I would say, yes, my art and my music and my life and everything about me is Austin influenced. Now, whether I helped influence Austin at all, I don't know. I will never know. But I could not have ever, you know, Austin was just let you be who you want to be. That's what this town has always been about to me. It's like, come here and develop yourself. Make who you are. I was Kerry Fitzgerald in Houston. When I came to Austin, I was Kerry On. I was like, okay, I'm going to make up a different guy, you know. And it's kind of a joke right there on the, you know, Kerry On. It's kind of, aha, that's a little joke right there. The name alone is like a little joke. So I don't know what I would be if I would have ever stayed living in Houston. I always wondered, would I be like the same person? Would I still be doing what I do? Or would I be working at a mall somewhere? I don't know. But Austin has always given me and anybody else that wants to take advantage of it the opportunity to kind of reinvent yourself. And to be who you really want to be, not who your parents want you to be or not who society tells you you should be. You just come here and kind of be who you want to be. So Austin has changed a lot over the years, but it still, to me, is a place where you can come and invent yourself. So I invented a band. I kind of invented me. I invented it all. And I don't know if I could do it without Austin. I don't think I could do it in Waco. The Uranium Savages, once again, we stumbled into everything. In my entire life, I've just kind of let things just happen to me. If I would have ever had a plan, it probably would have ended up exactly how it is now, but I couldn't have planned all this. For instance, in 1974, Jim Franklin, who had worked at the Armadillo, I'd done posters with him, opened up the Ritz Theater on 6th Street. He went over to 6th Street and rented the Ritz Theater, which in 1974, white people didn't go down on 6th Street. He didn't go there and hang out too much. It was mostly shot bars of Mexicans and blacks, and that's where they kind of, that was their little territory. White people hung around the campus, or they'd go to the Armadillo, or they'd go to West Austin. They didn't really go to East 6th Street too much, unless they wanted to pick up a transvestite. Which was really all that was happening down there. You know, shot bars, transvestites, and porno plays. It was just the sleaziest part of Austin and acceptable. Now, when Jim Franklin opened up the Ritz Theater, he suddenly had this theater that had formerly been a porno theater that now he was going to make into a music hall like the Armadillo. Well, he had a theater, so we actually had a place. Now, I was working at the Ritz Theater with Jim and Bill Livingood. We were just doing posters, and I was just, you know, whatever it took to open up this theater, I was there. Whether it was like, you know, sweeping the floor, selling popcorn, whatever. we would just go do that. Well, suddenly we had a theater and a stage. And so Jim said, we approached Jim. We said, hey, could we do a show here? And he goes, well, is it going to be any good? And we go, well, I don't know if that makes any difference or not, but we want to do something. So he said, okay, we'll give you an off night, a Thursday night. Y'all can do a show. So we did a show. The Uranium Savages played with a group, and we did a Battle of the Bands, because something we remembered, you know, from high school, the Battle of the Bands. They used to do that stuff. So we said, we'll have a Battle of the Bands. So we got these guys that were kind of the blues guys that later went on to Antones. They were the Antones guys. Before Antones was open, these were the guys. Clifford Antone was the bass player in the band that we played. So the blues guys kind of went to the rock and roll hippie guys, had a Battle of the Bands. And we thought that was going to be our last gig ever. We're going to play one gig, be a big gig, and that'll be it. Ha ha, we have a lot of fun. Well, we won the Battle of the Bands. Amazingly enough. And so out of that, Soap Creek said, hey, y'all come play here on New Year's Eve. So suddenly we had another gig. So we went out and played at Soap Creek Saloon, the original one, with Ramon and the Four Daddios, which was a band that we were trying to copy a little bit. That was Jim Franklin's crazy rock and roll band. They were a parody band. No, not parody, but they did 50 songs. And they were kind of a cover band, but they were outrageous. They wore costumes, and they were funny. Well, we were kind of copying them a little bit because we wanted to be the outrageous, funny band. And so we got to play with Ramon and the Four Daddios. And we kind of were more outrageous than them. And they broke up soon afterwards. So we kind of just picked it up. And after we did very well on that New Year's Eve, Carlin Major, who ran Soap Creek with George Majeski, her husband, hired us again. We got another gig at Soap Creek. Well, suddenly we're getting these little gigs. So how are we going to break up when suddenly people want to hire us? So we thought we would play one gig and that would be it. But now it's 40-something years later, we're still playing. You know, I mean, it's not the same people, of course, that were there that day one. But it's the same spirit and the same core of the couple of three guys that are still keeping the flame going. So basically, when we were going, Soap Creek Saloon and Armadillo were kind of the main clubs in town. Armadillo was kind of like touring bands, and they'd have local bands too, but they were mostly national acts. Soap Creek was more like Texas groups, you know, Delbert McClinton or, you know, Doug Somm or, you know, Joey Lee, those guys. It was kind of the people that were already playing around Austin. Well, Soap Creek was kind of their place. So suddenly we're in with these people, and we're playing out there at Soap Creek on a regular basis, and we're playing the big weekends, and we're playing the New Year's Eve, we're playing Halloween, and I know for a fact that kind of pissed off a lot of these real players out there, you know, because I heard later on that some of these musicians were kind of mad at the Savages. They didn't like us that much because we were getting the good Halloween nights and New Year's Eve nights, and here's these blues players, you know, the Thunderbirds and those guys, Stevie Ray. They were kind of a little upset, you know, because we were getting all these big gigs. And, of course, we all made friends later on. But back then, it was kind of like different camps. You know, here's the blues camp. Here's the country camp. Here's the rock camp. Soap Creek kind of brought everybody together a little bit because they had all styles of music play there. And at first, it was kind of like battling with these other bands. But later on, after we got to know each other, it's like, we realized that we're just, you know, we're friends. We're the same people. We're from Texas. We're Texas boys, and we're all just, you know, whatever Texas boys do. And I think Texas people, and I'm just, when I say boys, it means all people, not just guys, you know, because there's a certain something about this town and people that grow up in Texas, just kind of an independent spirit, still to this day, which I admire. Being a part of the musical community, and I guess I am part of it, once again, I'm like, one of the few guys that are part of the musical community that can't sing or play an instrument, who still is part of it. I mean, that's all I know. I couldn't go to Dallas and be part of their community. I couldn't go to Nashville and be their part of their community. it just wouldn't happen if I was just a solo guy walking up. Hey, I got some songs here I want to sing. It goes like this. People go, get out of here. Go away. Now, once again, Austin has made me what I am. And I would not be able to do it any other town, I do not believe. I was able to meet a lot of really good musicians and a lot of people that really are world-class musicians in this town that are people that are friends of yours that you know from Barton Springs or you know hanging out at somewhere. You know them through other ways. They're just friends. And like, oh, great. Oh, Stevie Ray, you're a pretty good guitar player. Can you? I'm just using him as an example. But anybody else, everybody else in this town, is only, you know, maybe not at first so much, but later on kind of encouraged me what I do. And because of the music, and here's the truth of the matter, I started out art, and because of the art, I got to be in a band. And because I was in a band, I got to be in Esther's Follies, and I got to be in theater. So Esther's Follies asked me one time, hey, Kerry, will you come over and do what you do with your band? Do it one weekend with our show? Oh, okay, I'll come over there and do something with Esther's because they've got women in their troupe. And they have a dressing room and their women back there, they could keep all their clothes in the same place. Wow, they had their own theater. In the band, you had to move around and go around and go play wherever people would hire you. But they had their own theater. So I was like, oh, so I went over to Esther's Follies to do one weekend. I ended up staying there 30 years. And that's the same thing with being in the Savages. We're going to do one show. And now 45 years later, we're still doing it. So I don't know how all this happened. I'm glad it did happen. But it was almost like people were just saying, okay, you need to come over here and do this. You need to do this. Oh, okay, I'll come do that. It wasn't like I had a big plan. I'm going to join Esther's Follies. But once I got in there and I saw how creative those people were, how much they made me laugh, and they liked me. They said, oh, well, you can do it. You go do a solo bit on stage. And I will. I had to come up with something, of course. And I'm sure it was terrible, the first things I ever did. But that's how you learn. You just go do it. That's how you learn anything, right? You just start doing it. Now, I could have probably been a great guitar player if I would have kept at it. But I didn't have the patience. I'd rather draw a little cartoon than learn to play a Beatles song. So I don't think, once again, Austin, Texas has made me what I am today and has helped me. Whatever I am today, it's their fault. It's Austin's fault. I'm blaming them right now. What is 709? Now, I get asked that all the time. And like, I would know. I don't know. How do I know what 709 is? It's just, that's the secret of 709. I mean, think of the secret of life. It means everything. It means nothing. Now, I always say, 709, that means God. What does God mean to you? And they go, I don't believe in God. Well, okay, well then 709 doesn't believe in you either. So 709 is what it is. That's a wonderful, that really is a wonderful saying. Although when I first heard it is what it is, I thought that's stupid. It is what it is kind of explains life. So 709 to me, what I'm still trying to figure out what it means. Basically, it just means whatever you want it to mean, and that's the beauty of it. It doesn't mean anything, and it means everything. Now, how it first came about, there is a story how it first came about, and this is the truth as far as I know. Back in the 60s, believe it or not, Houston, I was with the surfers crowd. I was a surfer. And people go, where did you surf in Texas? Well, we do have a Gulf of Mexico here, and there are some waves there sometimes, and it's pretty good once in a while. And that's where you go. You don't have California, you don't have Hawaii, you go to Surfside, Texas, South Padre here, Corpus. You go there, and maybe there's going to be surf. Well, we surf, surfers. Well, the surfers start going to Mexico. We were still in high school, and all our friends were going to Mexico. And we would go down to Mexico. And the parents would let us. I don't understand how they would let 16-year-olds go to Mexico. To this day, I still do not understand. Parents were like, okay, fine, go. It was so weird back then. You could almost go do a lot of stuff. So we would go to Mexico, and that's, of course, where we discovered pot, you know, in Mexico. They had it down there. They didn't have it in Houston back then. It wasn't there yet. So we discovered pot and discovered drugs down in Mexico, and which was cool. So a friend of mine was on the beach, laying on the beach, Sonny Ransom, and he was laying on the beach, and he's looking up at the clouds, and he saw 709 in the clouds, written out in the clouds. And so he had a revelation, 709, I saw that. It was like seeing God, or, you know. So he came back and started telling everybody in high school, 709, that's 709, which means it's good. It's something is 709, that means it's you want it, you like it. It's a good thing, it's a positive thing. Whatever you might want it to be, it is positive. There's no negativity about 709, it's all good. So Sonny Ransom was really the first person to ever see 709 in the clouds and tell us that it meant something. And so that's where it came from. It was from the surf group in Houston. And when we moved, a lot of these surfer guys moved to Austin and helped form the Uranium Savages. We all knew what 709 was. That was our number from day one. So it, once again, does that answer your question? It means nothing and it means everything. What does life mean itself? So what does 709 mean? 709 means life itself. There, that's it. One thing that I want to say about all this is it's given me a lot of confidence as a person over the years. I mean, I was the most shy, unconfident person ever you would ever meet. I was just scared of everything. Growing up, I was just always nervous that my mom wouldn't come back from the store. She's going to kill me in a car wreck. I always remember worrying. And just being scared. I don't know why. Life just seemed so overwhelming. Now, later as I got older, I realized that was really, really stupid of me to ever be scared of anything. Because, you know, you're supposed to be scared of stuff. And you're not supposed to be scared of being scared. You know, it's just like, I've really got more confidence the older I get, the more I feel like, well, okay, maybe I did okay in my life. I was always told, you need to go to school, you need to do this, you need to make straight A's, you need to comb your hair, you need to do this, you need to go to church, you need to do this. And I was like, I kind of tried to do it, but it just didn't feel right. Well, when I got to Austin and Austin changed me and I became Carry On, I got more comfortable in my own skin, basically. And I got to be in a band and play music, and people liked it. And people said, oh, yeah, I like that song, or I like what you're doing. And that's basically it. When people tell you that they like what you're doing, and what you're doing is something that you just kind of made up, then that's like printing money, isn't it? That's like, I can counterfeit money all day long. Make my own money just by doing what I do. So I do what I do, whatever I do it. And I'm not afraid of doing it anymore. Carry On pretty much never had a plan except to move to Austin. And once I moved to Austin, everything kind of fell into place and it all kind of just happened to me. I didn't plan to be in a band. I didn't plan to be in Esther's Follies. I didn't plan to do stand-up comedy. I didn't plan to do that. It just kind of fell in my lap. It came along. So Austin has always given me the opportunity to pretty much make up and create what I want to do. And there's kind of an audience out there for it. And it's always helped me. It's always supported me. So I've been very, very lucky in just actually living life. Really what it comes down to is you got to make yourself, you know, enjoy your life. You have to be able to get up in the morning and be, okay, I'm excited. What's going to happen today? What am I going to do today that's going to be fun? You know, and that's just kind of where I go towards. It's like almost like the least resistance that I could possibly find. like water. How water goes through creeks and streams. It just always, you know, water is soft. You can put your finger in it, but it's also the most powerful substance on the planet. You know, water will wear down mountains, and you got to have water every day or you're going to die. So water is really very, very important, but most people take it pretty much for it, you know. Water, I turn on water, found water comes out. Yeah, who? I don't think about water. So live your life like water. If that makes sense at all. Is this, go with the least resistance, go there, and after a few years, you're going to wear them down. If you keep doing what you're doing, you are going to wear them down, and you will be victorious in the end. Ta-da! Everyone in Austin has helped me so very much. And it's just really the people that have helped me. And I don't know. I'm going to start crying here for a second because I'm just thinking about the good people that I've met in this town and that have helped me. And it's because of them, really. I just kind of do what I do, which was basically, if you just left me alone, if you put me in a cell somewhere and said, okay, go do what you do, I would just probably sit there all day long and doodle and drool on myself. But people have come along and helped me. For instance, doing this little interview right now is helping me in some strange way. It's helping me actually talk and say things that have maybe been hidden. So I want to thank everyone that's ever helped me. And basically, the only way they've ever helped me is by saying, okay, go do what you want to do. They give me permission to go do this. And that's really a big, big thing. People to give you permission to go and do what you want to do. And then make a couple of bucks afterwards. Wow! Printing money. That's it. Printing money. So thank you, Austin. I love you. You've made me this. And it's all your fault. So, 709.